a ruling in the Charlie White case. Will he be removed from office? The president cancels a trip to Indianapolis. Todd Young gets a featured role in the political theater in D.C. Sentencing reform, Donald Trump in a pace car, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending April 8, 2011.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, a Democratic Party challenge to the election of Republican Secretary of State Charlie White, rejected by the State Recount Commission in December, must be reconsidered, according to a court ruling. Judge Louis Rosenberg, a Democrat, says the commission needs to determine if Charlie White was legally registered to vote in the November election. White is already facing a 7-count indictment accusing him of felonies, including voter fraud. A grand jury in the Democratic Party say that White lied on his voter registration by listing the home of his ex-wife as his address while he lived miles away in a new residence. The lie, Democrats say, permitted White to continue serving on the Fishers Town Council.
The judge says you didn't get a fair hearing in the Recount Commission last time. Do you think you can get a fair hearing a second time?
Well, given what the judge said in his final statement, that is what he's asking for. That's what we hope.
How quickly can that be done?
You know, that's something that obviously we're going to have to study the court's opinion, and obviously we take very seriously any directives that we receive from the judge.
What's a bigger threat to Charlie White, the Democratic challenge or the criminal charges? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV Statehouse reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, do Democrats want this case settled before Charlie White can be offered a plea deal?
I think they want it settled as soon as possible. And if the State Election Commission had done its job in December correctly, it could have been settled back then. So I don't know that they're going to offer Charlie White a plea deal. I think they've got Charlie White pretty cold. I mean, he may walk in and plead guilty and throw himself on the mercy of the court, but he's not going to do that until he absolutely has to. And from a Democratic perspective, you know, this is almost the gift that keeps on giving. I mean, every time you turn around, there's another mistake on his part. But here, you know, you've got him cold on voter fraud. He's not you know, if you listen to their argument was that the law says that you have to be registered. It doesn't mean that you have to be legally registered. So, you know, if you were an illegal alien who was underage and didn't live in Indiana, as long as you had a registration form filled out, under their argument, you could be Secretary of State. It's a beautiful argument to make to a court.
What the reality is, Charlie White's in a box because he has to make arguments like that in the civil case because he doesn't want to create a record for the criminal case, right?
I think there's some truth to that. But as you well know, this is going to be appealed, as everybody knew it would be, and so we got a long way to go on this.
Do you think he'd rather deal with the criminal charges than deal with the civil charges?
I can't second guess what they're trying to do on that.
Okay. Is his future gloomy? Is it more gloomy now? Is it more gloomy now than it was 2 days ago?
On the gloomy side.
You've asked some softball questions over the years. Clearly, this is a bleak scenario, outlook, if you were Charlie White. And you're right, Jim. It probably does. It's bleaker now than it was earlier in the week because you pointed out, in fact, I think on your blog, that the job he has now is effectively a bargaining chip. If, in fact, he can hold on to that to the point where criminal proceedings get to the point that perhaps, now Ann says it's unlikely that a plea agreement would be offered, but if it's on the table,
the only bargaining chip he has
is that. And the other thing I think interesting, Judge Rosenberg, He hasn't basically, even though he sent this back to the commission, right. He hasn't washed his hands of it. He still has jurisdiction. So as I understand it, if he doesn't like what they do, the ball is still in his court. And he made pretty clear with the comments he made in court how he feels about this, saying this is a chance for
the... He said the future of the political system in Indiana is at stake.
Right. I mean, he was very candid. He said it's a chance for the system to restore its credibility with the public. Those are pretty strong words from a judge, it seems to me.
In the meantime, Dan Parker has already made his appointment to the Recount Commission, changing from the member, Bob Kuzman, who was on in December, and naming former Judge Buddy Pilot. Is he playing politics now?
Is he playing politics? That's his game. I mean, that's what Dan Parker's paid to do, and you would expect nothing less. Look, Dan's played this one pretty well. Bringing the lawsuit and the action to begin with was a very good move on their part. It opened a second front in the Charlie White War. And, you know, it really has put Charlie White in a box. And so, you know, you gotta give props where they deserve. But I think that the judge is right. This is very serious, and credibility is in question, and it's important for the whole process right now.
And what the Democrats say thereafter with this challenge is to have Bob Ossoli, the Democrat who was on the ballot in November, put in office. They really have any realistic expectation that
would
happen?
Well, that's what the statute provides. If he's not eligible to be on the ballot, the next biggest vote getter gets the office. And on this front, I think the appointment of Buddy Pilot is a good one. I mean, a former judge, former chief assistant U.S. attorney. He's a Democrat, certainly, but he's not particularly partisan.
He did run for Congress once.
How long ago was that? You're the only one who even remembers that. He's been involved in the law, and as a judge, he's always been very well regarded. So that's a good appointment. The reason I think that you may be right that he's in a bigger box is not because whether he'd rather be Secretary of State or rather face criminal charges. The problem he has is if they have hearings and he's subpoenaed to testify, what does he do? Does he take the Fifth Amendment? Think about the video on that. The chief election officer taking the Fifth Amendment on camera. Wonderful.
The potential for a Democrat to win that office, does that bring more pressure on Charlie White to step down?
I think Charlie White's pretty much dug in. I think he's going to stick to this, and I think he's going to play it to the end, even though everybody that I can think of has asked him to step aside until this is resolved. I think he sees that as an admission of guilt, and I don't think he's going to do that.
Moving on, President Obama scheduled a visit to Indianapolis this week and then canceled it to stay in Washington in the effort to avoid a government shutdown. Budget talks have so far failed to produce a compromise on funding for the last 6 months of the fiscal year. Without a deal, more than 800,000 federal workers would be furloughed. Military paychecks could be delayed. National parks and museums would be shut down. Both sides say the sticking points are big ones, and so far neither side is backing down.
If they want to play political games and force a shutdown, let's shut it down. I mean, nobody wants a government shutdown. But if we don't take decisive steps to change the fiscal direction of our national government, we're going to shut down the future for our children and grandchildren here in Indiana, and that'll be worse.
We had the best report, jobs report, that we'd seen in a very long time, that just this past Friday. For us to go backwards because Washington couldn't get its act together is unacceptable.
All those in favor say aye.
The president there preceded by Indiana Congressman Mike Pence. Mike McDaniel, let's start with the president's original plan to come to Indianapolis. It was announced on the same day that he announced a formal bid for re-election. Do you think the visit here was motivated more by policy or politics?
Well, I mean, you know, let's start with every appearance the president makes from now on is political. Whether you do it in a government setting or you do it in a hardcore political setting. When you're running for re-election, everything you do is about getting re-elected. I mean, that's a given.
Right.
Clearly this would have been. But, look, he made the right decision by staying in Washington this week and trying to help solve this problem rather than come here. It would have been a disaster for him to come here with that going on in Washington.
But he, in the meantime, needed to keep his schedule active in order to not give in to the Republicans 3 days early.
He thinks he can win Indiana a second time?
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, he's here to, you know, to highlight the fact that $425 million was put directly from the stimulus package into the electric car industry in Indiana because of that. Opposed every step of the way by the Republicans, now bearing fruit and creating jobs here. He's contesting Indiana, and in fact, he has a staff that's still here and has been here since the last election. So
that is staff that became part of what's known as Organizing for America.
He has a basis for this.
Which is an offshoot of the Obama campaign. Okay, he was going to come to Allison Tour Transmission Plant that's making hybrid transmissions, and they say he's going to come back.
Right, and why wouldn't he? For the reasons that Ann stated, a lot of money has been put into the hybrid industry in Indiana for a lot of good reasons. You know, those transmissions that Allison has been making are important to heavy vehicle hybridization, so that's an important point. The battery technology in Indiana is above everybody else in the United States, and that's good for the state. So he ought to come and tout those things for both reasons. One, because it's good for the economy of the state and for the economy of the country, but secondly, it's just good politics.
And that's, I think, why we know it was a political visit, because of the subject matter. You know, 2 months or 3 months ago, the biggest obstacle I think the White House feared in terms of gaining a second term was unemployment, the unemployment rate. Now that that appears to be a little bit better, what's getting worse? Fuel prices. And in fact, Doug Schoen, who's a former Clinton advisor and used to do, familiar to Ann because I think he used to do Evan Bayh's polling back in the gubernatorial days, he said that if the gas prices don't come down, that the president, and this is coming from a Democratic advisor, is in mortal peril, his words, because if you look at unemployment as a political threat, it's 9 to 10% of the people who are hurt. You look at rising fuel prices, effectively 100%. And there are opponents and would-be opponents of the president who are already recognizing this and seizing on it. Tim Pawlenty, former Minnesota governor who's running for president, last week came out with a spot where a lot of the images are gas pumps with $4 price tags on them. So I think that's why we know this.
He also had, as I understand it, he had a fundraiser scheduled in Chicago, so the motivation for the trip was political. But we've seen a lot of presidents and presidential candidates find places to stop other than Indiana.
And that's why you can be certain that it's going to be a contested race. And you got this here. Obviously, he had to stay in Washington because of the Republican ideological warfare out there. They want to make war on poor women and pap smears, and they want to make war on Big Bird, and has nothing to do with finances. Yeah. So, well, you know, I'm hopeful that they'll see the light, or if not, the voters will vote him out.
But if Mitch Daniels runs, that's probably the end of Barack Obama coming to Indiana.
I think Barack Obama is going to have a problem in Indiana anyway. His numbers have fallen off the table. He's not going to do well here a second time. I think there's a lot of buyer's remorse in Indiana about Barack Obama.
And about Mitch Daniels.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, can Barack Obama win Indiana twice? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C. It's up to Mitch Daniels. Last week's question was, which party gained the most from the Democratic walkout? 58% said the Republicans, 26% said the Democrats, 16% said Ask Me in 2012. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Now, as we said, there's a budget fight underway on Capitol Hill this week, and a freshman congressman from Indiana played a featured role in the debate. Todd Young appeared on stage when the GOP proposed a long-term budget approach that calls for $6.2 trillion in spending cuts. The Indiana freshman, along with freshman Todd Rokita and freshman Marlon Stutzman, were all on stage. Both are also members of the Budget Committee. Young was the only one to speak, however, as he explained plans to cut welfare.
The best welfare program is ultimately a job. So we reformed our job training programs. We consolidated the current complex maze of dozens of federal job training programs into a single program.
John Katzenberger, what's that mean for Todd Young?
Well, it means he's got an opportunity in the caucus. You know, I think that if you look at history, you can see a recent example in Mike Pence, who's done very much the similar thing. When he was a freshman, he got some appointments like this and some opportunities to make these kinds of points and to forward these kinds of issues, and so Todd Young is apparently getting the same kind of opportunity. It depends on what he makes of it and how it goes forward.
This is all about, especially for freshman Republicans, I think, it's about living up to campaign promises from last time around, but also creating campaign issues for next time.
he's a guy who may need some.
Arguably, sure. I mean, look at that district. Now, granted, the boundaries will be different next time around, but if there was such a thing as a ping-pong ball of a district, it was the district that he secured from Barron Hill in the last November's election. So, sure, I'm sure he wants to be as high-profile and as visible and appear to be as active as John indicated. And I think the Republicans, this is their chance, you're right, Jim, to say, hey, they perceive a mandate, whether or not there was one. They perceive a mandate. This is our chance to trot out a $6.2 trillion budget reduction plan, whether or not it would work, whether or not it would accomplish what it sets out to accomplish. It's immaterial because it does provide good fodder heading into the next round of elections.
Well, we heard from Mike Pence earlier. I mean, when you get into a high-profile debate like this that the whole country's watching, there are opportunities for individual congressmen to draw the light on them. They can be beneficial, sometimes not. Is this high-risk territory?
Well, for Todd Young, it's not high-risk at all. I mean, it's a great opportunity, as John said. I mean, for a freshman to be part of the budget-making process and play such a prominent role at this early stage of his career is phenomenal. And he's a very capable guy, and he's going to have more and more of those opportunities. You know, America voted by the millions to stop the government runaway spending, and this Congress is determined to stop that. And I think even though they're down to fighting over $5 billion, which in the big scheme of things right now is not a lot of money to avoid this particular shutdown, the budget that was proposed by Paul Ryan truly is a workable plan for the future of this country, and Todd Young had a major hand in that.
Yeah, it's fraught with risk. There's no question about it, because what they're doing is recycling trickle-down economics again. What they want to do is they want to cut unemployment benefits, they want to cut medical care for the poor and the elderly, and they want to make war on women, and they want to do all of those things. They want to do all of those things at the same time they cut taxes for the wealthy and cut corporate taxes.
Well,
the trickle-down theory didn't work in the 80s, and it's not going to work again, and there will be a backlash.
The alternative is tax increases.
Well,
which is what you're calling.
That's not the alternative.
But the simple fact is, though, when you're talking about spending cuts, you're talking about political decisions.
Sure you
absolutely
are. And they're willing to make them. What
they're
offering
willing
is tax.
To shut the government
down. What you
want to
do is raise taxes. Let's raise taxes.
Let's
shut the government down.
Yeah.
Raise taxes.
What, quickly, you have something?
Well, I couldn't get it in with these two, but
you've never been shy before, John.
Social Security used to be the third rail of politics.
Yeah.
You touch it, you die. And that's why that's not in this plan. They perhaps have wisely stayed away
from it.
Medicare
is.
But Medicare, if there were a fourth rail, I guess that's not the way subways work, but if there were a fourth rail, that would be it. And that affects elderly voters, older voters who tend to have perhaps voted Republican in the last election.
And if you ask Democrat governors, they'll tell you they like the block grant idea.
Oh, I'm sure they do.
Yeah. All right, back to the State House, where sentencing reform is one of the governor's priorities. He wants shorter sentences for nonviolent offenders to reduce the need for new prisons. State lawmakers, however, have different ideas, and they changed the governor's bill in the state Senate to create longer sentences for violent criminals. This House committee is now considering the Senate bill, a bill the governor has threatened to veto, a threat that had no effect on the author.
It doesn't cause me to lose any sleep when I hear testimony that drug dealers from Illinois and Ohio refer to Indiana's the Bermuda Triangle.
Those violent offenders, the worst of the worst, is going to continue to grow and grow and grow. Thereby, you increase the likelihood that you're going to have conduct problems within your facilities. You increase the likelihood that you're going to have escapes because their outdate is postponed so far that these folks simply don't care anymore.
That's Amanda Copeland from the Department of Correction giving the Daniels administration sales pitch, preceded by State Senator Brent Steele, who is at odds with the governor, John Schwanes. Can the governor rescue his prison reform?
Well, clearly there's a scramble to try to salvage what a few weeks ago appeared to be a bill going nowhere because of the changes that had been made in the Senate. Representative Ralph Foley, Republican from Martinsville, who is the sponsor of the bill, has been working with all parties. Prosecuting Attorney's Counsel, which was adamantly opposed to the original legislation, working with the governor's office and others to try to come up with something. He thinks that the answer may lie in returning to what had been recommended in terms of the gradations of the sentencing, but do away with the provision that the Senate had put in, which required 85% of sentences to be served. The bone
rather
that
is 50-50,
rather than 50,
it is
the bone that is thrown to those who are concerned about appearing soft on crime is a provision that would add 10 years to murder, sentences for murder or other violent felonies. So that is the hope. Now, if it doesn't happen this session, I don't think this will, because you have Republicans, you have Republicans in control of both chambers.
Governor's last chance.
This is it.
He issued a veto threat awfully early in the process.
Well, I think it indicates a level of frustration that's a little bit interesting. I don't think he anticipated the opposition he got from the prosecutors on this. I think he feels a little bit surprised by that ambush, maybe. And he's doing this from a practical perspective and probably didn't anticipate the political pushback. But the reality is they're going to have to expend a lot of money for new prisons if they don't do this kind of a reduction for nonviolent criminals or some other form to reduce the population.
This is an example where the conservative nature of the new Republican majority is not helping the governor.
It's not helping him at all. And it's not even the fiscally responsible approach either, which they keep talking about. Because the fact of the matter is, if you get somebody with a murder sentence and you get a 60-year sentence, and the average age of somebody sentenced under that somewhere in the 20s, okay? By the time they get out of this, they're beyond the range where they're going to commit a second murder. Recidivism in that is not high. And what you're going to wind up doing by extending those sentences is paying their health care costs, their hip replacements, their eye surgery, everything else. The cost is not simply going to be incarceration. You are going to be Medicare for those individuals for the foreseeable future. It doesn't make fiscal sense.
Can the governor save this?
I think there's going to be something salvaged of this, because everybody understands that we've got to turn this around, or you're going to end up spending even more money on prisons that you would like to spend on things like education and other things.
DOC says they'll be back in 2 years asking for more prison money.
You're
going to
see something salvaged out of this. The problem is you got Republicans and Democrats alike, prosecutors statewide that don't like it. It's hard for legislators to say they're not tough on crime. Some of the sheriffs don't like it, not all of them. Yeah. But everybody kind of came together and agreed on the front end that it was necessary. Now the problem is trying to get people to hold to it.
And great, it's very, very difficult. More prisons and don't put money in education. What a message that sends.
Moving on. Butler lost the men's national basketball championship to Connecticut this week. And Texas A&M defeated Notre Dame 76-60 to win the women's NCAA tournament here in Indianapolis. The games here fell short of sellouts, even though there was an Indiana team in the final game. And Delaney, was the women's Final Four a success?
Oh, I don't think there's any question about that. I mean, nobody expected this to be a sellout. Everybody understands that women's basketball is not on a parity with men's yet, but they're building with it each year. They had tremendous crowds, and by the way, that was darn good basketball. And every other event the NCAA and the Indiana Sports Corporation had in Indianapolis was substantially higher in attendance than San Antonio had last year. So it's clearly a big, big selling point for this city.
TV ratings were good, too. Did Butler, though, draw away from their success?
From the media coverage.
It probably did for media coverage, but the tournament, as Ann said, was a great success. I had the pleasure of being there for the two semifinal games. It was great basketball. The games were good. The atmosphere was wonderful. The city embraced this event like it's not embraced anywhere else. So I think it was a win-win for us on that score. But clearly Butler stole some of the air out of this because they were in the final game again.
So that was part of the advice to the next team, is make certain that no team from your
no
state, you know, for the men's sides in the finals.
Yeah. Any danger of Final Four fatigue in Indianapolis?
Not a bit. This is a day of easy questions.
The Final Four will always be a great and big event in Indianapolis that will happen at least through 2030 every 5 years for the men and the women. I can't wait for the next one.
And that's why Indianapolis keeps getting it again and again. Everybody knows, sports writers across the country, we read that story every time there's an event here. Indianapolis knows how to do it. And as long as that perception's out there, they'll keep coming back.
And kudos to Ann. She's one of the co-chairmen of the event. Did a good job.
Thank you, Michael.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Finally, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway picked a potential presidential candidate to drive the pace car at this year's Indy 500.
Do they pay me for this or not? So I called a couple of friends. They said, no, Donald, this is a great honor. Windy in
the car. That's Donald Trump. When asked about his hair on race day, Trump said he will make a decision closer to that time whether he should wear a hat or not. I say, get the hat, Donald. Mike McDaniel, is that a good choice?
You know what? I laugh. This has stirred up an unbelievable hornet's nest debate. And the gentleman who's promoting the Indy Racing League now has hit a home run with this pick. And because people are talking about it, and the more they talk about the Indianapolis 500, the bigger.
You think it's good?
100th anniversary of the race, you could pick any racing figure in the world you wanted.
Here's and nobody would care.
And
nobody would care.
People were asking if he had a driver's license.
Yeah, I think it's. I actually think it's a poor pick, and it won't simply be a hat. He'll have shellac. Because otherwise,
shellac.
He'd be airborne.
I think this is unfortunate because it is such an important year, and I understand the concept of marketing, Mike. I think that the Speedway has done a very good job, but this is really a poor choice.
My question, they don't still have that multi-tiered photographer platform down at the end of the pits?
No.
Okay, then this is probably okay then, because that was proved to be a problem once when there was...
he may remember you.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's for those racing fans who like
the 1970s rating. We roasted him at the gridiron, and we said, it's to deal with the hair, it's a comb over. If Dan Coats had $1 billion, that's what he'd look like. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. Just go to Hoosier TV and look for Indiana Week in Review under News. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in 1,000 different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the 1,000 and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.